Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Narrative First Podcast, the weekly podcast where story is always king. I'm your host, Jim Hull, the voice of Narrative First, and this is episode number 8, Zootopia and Batman Begins. Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for letting me in to talk about story and story structure. These podcasts I had intended to be weekly, and that's where I will be taking them again quite soon. But in the last 3-4 weeks, the Narrative First roadmaps, which are basically just me going through, reading through your synopsis and trying to determine what the Dramatica story form is for your story, those have been so popular that I really haven't had any time to record any podcasts. So this is my attempt to get back on track. I've got a whole schedule that I think I got figured out now. What I'm going to do is on Mondays, I'll be publishing Ella Mondays, which are basically just, I think I'm going to do like a video online sort of thing where I go through and look at a certain quad of elements within Dramatica. So like, I think the first one's going to be pursuit, avoid, control, and uncontrolled, which is a super popular set of elements that every mid-20th century film always used for their overall story through line. And so I'll probably take one or two different films, different genres, and show how those quad of elements show up in the overall story and how they work independently. You know, like, it's not just one set story. You know, maybe the problem is pursuit, like if it's Terminator, and then the solution is avoidance, which is another way of looking at avoid is to prevent. So when she actually turns around and actually tries to stop the Terminator, that's when she wins. And then compare that to something like maybe Casablanca, where the problem is control. So, you know, it's a very restricted situation there for everybody, including Rick himself is emotionally shut off. And then, you know, the solution is uncontrolled, which is freedom, you know, letting everybody escape. That actually solves the problem. So you have those same four elements: pursuit, avoid, control, and uncontrolled, and then you kind of mix them together, and that's how you get the different stories. So I'll be showing that, and that's going to be a feature called Ella Mondays. And then on Tuesday, I'll be publishing the podcast, and I'm going to do something different. Whereas before, I would go and just read the articles from the week before and kind of catch everybody up. I don't think that makes much sense, because if you're actually following along, and you get the weekly newsletter every Friday, then why would you want to just hear an audio version of it on Tuesday? So what I'm going to do is on Tuesdays, I'm actually going to go through and kind of give like a rough draft of what this week's huge article or topic is going to be. So it's like my dry run through. When I used to write articles every week, starting back in 2010, when I started writing consistently, March through November, Tuesdays were the day that I would actually do the rough draft of my articles, and I absolutely loved that. I would do the rough draft on Tuesday, go over it on Wednesday, and publish on Thursday, and I'm trying my hardest to get back to that kind of schedule, because I think it helps to keep the momentum up, and I think the quality of articles increases, and it's just a great way to get information across. So I'm actually going to use the podcast to do that first draft, so you're going to get like a sneak peek at what's coming up. And there might be things that are wrong, things that I have to switch around as I actually write it out, but at least, you know, it becomes more interesting than simply a rehash of last week's stuff. And then on Thursdays, I'm going to do Throughline Thursdays, which are used to be Throughline Tuesdays, but they're based on my Patterns of Conflict book. And what it is, I do like a genre chart, a Dramatica genre chart of the film in question. So Dramatica sees genre as kind of like the feeling or personality of the film, and that is based on the arrangement of through lines with the main character, overall story, influence character, and relationship story. You know, where those are, like, is the main character in situation in the overall story is in activity, or is it in psychology? And put together a little graphic and then kind of explain why each through line is in there. It's really simple, but I think it'll be great to build up, you know, a knowledge of how different films feel and why they feel differently, and it's because of their structure. And then on Fridays, I publish the weekly newsletter. It's going to be more of a digest sort of thing, so I can just wrap everything up. I might go back to actually publishing the whole thing. If you missed the whole thing, let me know. But it seems like the digest was a little more popular last time around. And if you want to sign up for that and you haven't signed up yet, you can go to narrativefirst.com/subscribe. It's just a free newsletter and no spammy sort of stuff. Occasionally I might send something, an update on some new product or service. But, you know, if you're into story and story structure and you like listening to what you hear here, then you will probably enjoy the newsletter as well. And then finally, if you are interested in a roadmap, Narrative First roadmap, make sure you get in early, especially if you're planning on writing something in July or on your summer break, because the wait time is now almost 3 weeks, amount of time you'll have to wait before I actually get to it, because there's such a backlog of people that want them. So if you want to do that, you can go to narrativefirst.com/roadmap. Okay, so the first thing I want to talk about before I get into the two films that I'll be looking over this week is the new You and I video. If you've never read the article, Two Sides of the Same Coin, you might want to look for that on the site. It's in the vault section. And it's essentially a montage of clips that Chris Huntley, one of the co-creators of the Dramatica Theory of Story, put together to kind of showcase the relationship between the main and influence character. You'll always hear this line of dialogue where it's like, you and I are both alike. Then the other guy will say, no, we're nothing alike. And you're just a shadow reflection of myself. And, you know, really overwrought, cliched line of dialogue. And it's not cliched so much because people see it and they'll think, well, I'm just going to copy that and use that line of dialogue. It's more that there's actually a structural reason for why somebody would say, you and I are both alike. And if you know anything about Dramatica, it has a lot to do with where the through lines are situated. So, you know, if you check out Throughline Thursdays, you'll see that the main character and influence character have something that's very much alike and something that's very much not alike, and that's tied into the structure of it. So it's a funny collection of clips to watch and just to be reminded of, oh, I guess this happens all the time. And it can be handled really sophisticated. Like in Doubt, you know, you have two amazing actors delivering a cliched line of dialogue, but you don't mind it at all. Or it can be super cheesy, like the first clip that you'll see when you watch it. So you can find that. It's, if you go to the site right now, the top thought there, narrativefirst.com/blog, you'll see a link to it. You can check that out. So this week I'm going to write two analyses. One is of the Disney animated film Zootopia, and the second is Batman Begins. With Zootopia, it's very interesting. It's a very popular film. It's done really, really well everywhere. And generally speaking, that means there is a solid story form there. But I think the reason why the film is so popular is because of its message of inclusion, which everybody loves. And because the animation itself is so amazing. In my previous life, I was an animator, and I can't imagine being able to live up to the skill level of what I saw when I watched Zootopia. I mean, the first 10 minutes, I was completely awestruck, and the level of artistry and just acting ability from, because I know how difficult it is to make those things move and look that way, is absolutely inspiring. It's very, very impressive. So even though I have issues with the story, and I'm sure you have issues with them as well too, but you probably just didn't know it, you should definitely go see it because the animation is just completely nuts. It's amazing. But there are some strange story issues in there. And I remember when I was doing animation for the Shanghai Amusement Park, I was doing some Snow White animation, that they were holding brain trust meetings in the same building. You know, they would gather all the people that know everything about story, pile them into a room, and try and fix Zootopia to try and make it work. Now, if I had only known when I was going to get my chicken sandwich that they were having trouble identifying the scope of their argument, then I would have at least just poked my head in and given them a suggestion or two. So, two things stand out. The first is this idea of the scope of the argument of the story. I mean, I guess the biggest faux pas or biggest problem with the film is that they actually break what Dramatica calls the story limit. So if you buy into the idea that a story is a single human mind trying to solve a problem, and it's an analogy to that single human mind trying to solve a problem, then what you need to do is you need to define the scope of that problem solving, you know, the scope of the argument. And you do this with a story limit, which can either be an option lock or it can be a time lock. So the time lock's usually the one that's easier to understand. So, you know, we have 16 hours to save the Earth before a giant rock smashes into it, or I'm stuck with you for 48 hours and we got to solve the case before that time is up. So those are, you know, time, or high noon, something like that. You know, bad guys are coming in on a train at 12 o'clock. Those are time limits. Option limits are like three wishes. You know, like you have three wishes. Once those three wishes are up, that's it. Or it's like the seven deadly sins in Seven, right? You know, oh, when I get down to the sixth sin, you know, I think the film's going to be over. But of course, they get rid of six and seven all at once. And, you know, or maybe, you know, the rose petals in Beauty and the Beast, as they kind of fall down. You know, once that rose petals, once all of them have fallen down, you know that the story's over. So when you set up the story limit, the audience knows when the film is going to come to an end, and they expect that. So when you break expectations, you kind of mess with the whole story, and it leaves everybody wondering when the heck the story will actually ever end. So in Zootopia, Idris the Ox tells everybody in the beginning, I think there's like, what, 14 animals missing, and he's got the map, and here's all the different animals we have to find, and there's an investigation underway. So instantly, this clues the audience in on, you know, the limit, the end of the story. Once those 14 are found, then the story will be over and everything will be fine. You know, it's kind of like 10 little Indians. You know, once one little Indian gone, then you go to the next one and the next one. And then once you get down to those last two, then you know that that's the end of the story. Because there's nowhere left to go. I mean, if you go somewhere else, then you're actually changing the scope, and then you change the actual meaning of the story. That's the whole point. You're going to be changing what everything means, so then you're going to have to readjust everything that you learned before. But it wasn't intentionally supposed to be like that. You know, it wasn't actually part of the structure, like a sixth sense sort of thing. And this is what happens in Zootopia. They rescue everyone, and then you're left wondering, okay, so what is the story actually about? And that's when you remember that when Disney and Pixar are stuck for an idea, they simply just make the kindly do-gooder the turncoat with bad intentions. Which will someday eventually be a cliche that hopefully will go far, far away. And then once you remember that and you know that, then and once the story limit's over, you're just sitting there waiting, okay, when is this lamb going to spring her trap? And then it's just up to the rabbit and the fox to take her down. So it all it becomes is when do you defeat the bad guy? And it's uninspiring, it's not connected to thematics, and it's kind of like a foregone conclusion. You know it's going to happen. So, I mean, for kids, it's great because they're not really tied into, they don't have that whole wealth of that backlog of films that they've seen so that they know exactly what's going to happen. And perhaps the familiarity is comfortable to them. But for other audiences, you just are left with like, oh, okay, well, here we go. Let's just play it out and here comes the bad guy, and then everything will be over, and then we can go home and remember how great the animation was. And then the other thing, too, is around this time, too, and I'm not completely 100% sure about this, well, I'm like 87% sure, is the rabbit's through line, she's the main character, right, switches from a steadfast situation character, right, so she's in the situation domain, she's a rabbit that wants to be something else. And then she switches to a changed, fixed attitude character. So, and that's not part of her actual resolve change, if you know anything about Dramatica. In other words, they just kind of flopped her domains. So she's dealing with this one problem, which is, you know, her physicality and everybody looking at her that way. And then they switch it to all of a sudden now it's about she's a closet racist because of what's happened to her in the past, which I guess kind of sort of works. But then obviously she has to be the changed character in there. But throughout the whole first two thirds of the film, she was the steadfast character and the fox was going to be the one that changed. So I'm not really quite sure what happened there. It could be that I was just so annoyed with the limit being broken that I kind of lost track of what was going on. But like in a narrative sense, when I say I lost track of what was going on, it's Zootopia. It's not like super complicated storytelling. But as somebody who looks to stories to be more than simply just a telling of things that happen, you get lost if the thematics that they're dealing with all of a sudden change to something completely different. The problem with it is when you start out the story one way and then you kind of switch your train of thought to a different set of tracks, you're actually changing the story mind. So you need like a different story. Otherwise it comes off schizophrenic and, you know, like multiple personality disorder. That's what the film kind of has. So you're like, okay, well, I guess now this is what we're dealing with, is closet racism. There's nothing particularly wrong with that, except to say that the story is now of two minds and you're really not sure what they're getting at. Like I said at the beginning, the popularity of the film is based on its nice message about inclusion, but I don't think it did a very good job of arguing the necessity for inclusion. You know, it's a great subject matter, but I don't think they got the point across very well. And switching the main character's domain two-thirds of the way through really isn't doing them that much good. So I'll have to look into it more, but really, this all comes about because of this broken story limit. You know, they did it in Speed. That's the classic Dramatica example. The Keanu Reeves film from way back when. And they also did it in Ratatouille, which you can understand because Brad came in and took it over halfway through or whenever. And so, that, you know, you do have two different stories going on there. But still, you know, you set up a limit and then you break it and then you're kind of fishing around for, okay, when does the film actually end? So what you want to do, you know, when you're doing your own work is make sure you set up that limit in the first act and then honor it in each act that comes after and just end the story when it ends. And if you have to, move things around so that you meet the audience's expectations, like you don't break their trust. You know, they're trusting you to tell them this certain story. And then if you go and you completely change it, then, you know, they're just not going to trust you the next time around. What I used to do when I taught at CalArts story, I would show this YouTube video. You know, it's like classic YouTube video where it's funny and there's some things that happen. But then, you know, they just couldn't get enough laughter out of it. So they just kept punching the same joke over and over again, hitting upon it. And they'd already broken the limit. And then you're like, okay, when is this film, or when is this video ever going to end? And then you look at the timeline to see, oh god, there's like 3 minutes left of this painful. It's that idea. At least with Zootopia, you have some beautiful animation to watch, but still, with a story that breaks the story limit like that, you leave the audience kind of confused as to what it is you're trying to say. So overall, I think I would give Zootopia a 1 for structure. This is on a 5-star rating. So definitely a 1 for structure because it has the through lines there, which, you know, that's how you get your 1. But beyond that, it kind of breaks it all over the place. And then a 4 for entertainment because, like I said, the animation is gorgeous. My main topic for this week will actually be a film that came out 10 years ago, which was Christopher Nolan's first Batman film, Batman Begins. I've always really enjoyed Christopher Nolan's films. They've always been intriguing to me, and the storytelling is always, it's in the same section of the Dramatica table of story elements that I am particularly interested in, which is, if you have it, or if you want to go to Dramatica.com/downloads, you can see, you know, it's the past, understanding, conceptualizing and memories. And those to me just have this great dramatic weight to them that I'm interested in. So when I write my own stuff, they always end up being in there. So of course I'm attracted to stories that explore the same sort of thing. So, you know, his films, almost all his films, which I just realized again last night, have the main character in the same place, which is really compelling. I might actually end up writing something about that as well. How artists kind of explore the same area, which I think is totally, totally fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So after 10 years, right, you know, I've been working with Dramatica for 20 years now. It was way back in 96 that I first went to the Dramatica analysis of Breaking Away and was completely blown away by the theme browser. And I just thought, okay, this is the life for me. And so 20 years later. But 10 years ago, Batman Begin comes out in 2006. And I could have sworn I knew where the story form was, but I've never been able to pinpoint it. And part of the problem comes from this idea that is the first half of the film simply backstory, or is it actually an integral part of the story? And, you know, where he moves from, like how his growth, I'm talking Bruce Wayne, how it grows through the film. I do know the second film was a lot easier, right? At that time, he's the Dark Knight, and he has to become the villain that Gotham needs, right? So he moves from doer to beer. And it seemed to me that in the first film, he moved from a beer to a doer, which is kind of nice. If you have films that, you know, are one after the other, kind of nice if you can go from a beer to a doer, and then a doer to a beer, and then a beer to a doer. You have this kind of sine wave that goes up and down, and keeps the interest in there. And it helps too, especially if there are kind of similar issues, to have that kind of growth that goes on. So it goes from change to steadfast to change. And, you know, it just depends on whatever part on that sine wave you pick, that's the story you're going to tell. So I knew Dark Knight goes from doer to beer, and I had a feeling that Batman Begins goes from beer to doer, but he spends like almost all of it doing things to kind of, you know, satisfy his personal problems. You know, like when you first see him and he's in the North Korean concentration camp or whatever that is, prison camp. So when you first see him and he's in that North Korean prison camp, you know, he's definitely doing. But if you actually watch it, his first reaction isn't to do, it's actually to be, when he gets threatened by that big guy with the messed up eyes. You know, he actually tries to internalize it and just wait it out. And then when he's forced into action, he takes action. So I watched it again last night, and I finally figured out the story for him, and I'm super excited to share it with everybody. But he does definitely move from a beer to a doer. And that first hour is an integral part of the story. It's not just backstory. So for the longest time, I always thought that the overall story through line was in situation, right? You have Ra's al Ghul, and he's coming to take over the world and get rid of corruption by, you know, having Gotham destroy itself from the inside. So it seemed like, oh, okay, well, that must be a situation because they're already dealing with the past, and that's, you know, what is going on there. But when you think about it, that whole past situation or whatever it is, that kind of viewpoint of how Rome and Constantinople, how they have to kind of continuously overthrow corrupt societies, that's only coming from one person. That's coming from Ra's al Ghul, right? There's a bit of a handoff to Rachel Dawes. There's a little bit where she takes him in the car, and for some crazy reason, she pulls a left turn out of nowhere, and then all of a sudden, they're in the slums, and she's showing him around. So that's where the beat's supposed to happen narratively, but it just seems to come out of nowhere. And all of a sudden, she's the voice of Ra's at that time, because, you know, he's quote-unquote dead. So she's there to kind of push that signpost, that influence character signpost onto Bruce. And she's showing him around, saying how things are getting worse, right? So that viewpoint from Rachel, and predominantly Ra's or Ducard or whatever you want to call him, that's coming from just the influence character. So if you think of the influence character in situation, and particularly a concern of the past, right? And figure out where the main character is supposed to be. And Dramatica always puts main characters and influence characters in a dynamic pair relationship so that it has the most conflict. So if you have an influence character in situation, you'd want to have a main character in fixed attitude, which would make Bruce a beer, which is what he's dealing with, that fixed attitude, which is his fears, right? I mean, that's his whole thing, is trying to get over those fears. The fear of seeing all those bats, seeing his parents be killed, you know, that failure to act whole thing, that puts him in fixed attitude, and it gives him a concern of memories, which is great, because, I mean, every time when he gets hit with that psychotropic drug or whatever from the Scarecrow, and then he starts having flashbacks, like, those flashbacks, those are essential to what his character is going through, and those are those problematic memories he has of, you know, the night his parents were killed and all the stuff that he's seen prior to that. So that, to me, actually feels good. That would put the overall story in activities and concern of understanding, which, you know, if you think about what's actually going on and the misunderstanding that Ducard and his people are trying to foster upon people using the Scarecrow and all that stuff, it actually ties everybody in. It actually ties everybody into the entire story, which is what you want with an overall story. And then that would put the influence character and main character relationship or relationship story through line in manipulation, or, you know, it used to be called psychology, way of thinking, which is perfect for the mentor-mentee. You know, the "you and I are both alike" speech that we were talking about earlier, I think it's in this version of the video that I linked to now. But in that video, you'll see the "you and I" between Roz and Bruce. You know, "I was once like you, and I lost somebody." That's my Liam Neeson. It's pretty good, right? So you'll see that "you and I" between the main and influence character, which actually is cool. It's kind of like I planned all this together. So if you look at it, then you look closer and you compare their issues, you'll see Roz has an issue of interdiction, which is great, overthrowing corrupt societies, right? Once you see that the society is going to forever be corrupt, you have to overthrow it. So my issue is interdiction. And then that would put Bruce's issue in suspicion, which, you know, I think that works perfect with, you know, how he's always, he's suspect, you know, what are you doing late at night? Like that kind of stuff, that's kind of superficial. But also the suspicion that his dad, like, failed to act, and that he's kind of like holding that on, or suspects that it was his fault that his dad got killed. Actually, that's better. Yeah. The suspicion that it was his fault that his parents were murdered. That works perfectly. And this is why this is going to be a great addition to writing the articles and getting this information out there. This is a great way to kind of write that first rough draft. And then, you know, you'll see in the final article, it's great because the whole, you know, mind your surroundings, you know, you've sacrificed sure footing for a killing stroke, actually ties into the relationship story, problem and solution, which are self-aware and aware, which is so cool. Really, really cool. And so, yeah, once I finally figured out the domains of the main character and influence character, and then went down to the problem elements, everything just kind of fell into place. And, you know, finally, after 10 years, I have the actual story form so that we can actually talk about it. Topic of conversation to show how Beer to Doer in the first film, and then Doer to Beer in the second one. And best part about it is the idea that this idea of backstory is not really backstory. I mean, it's played out of sequence, you know, much like Memento, another Christopher Nolan film. But what Dramatica looks at isn't how things play out in sequence, like how it's woven together. Dramatica looks at, well, okay, if you put everything back in the temporal order it actually happened, that's how you look at the story form. So looking back at that, you can see that the story actually starts. Okay, so stories start the moment everything that's fine and peachy, once it's no longer fine and peachy. So when you lay everything out in order of how it actually happened in Batman Begins, you see that things were fine and peachy until Bruce's parents were killed, right? And in that mansion sequence, which I'll put I'll put in the show notes, and then I'll also link to it in the article. In that mansion sequence where he explains, where Ducard explains to Bruce exactly why they had to act, was because once his parents were killed, once Bruce's parents were killed, the things started to turn around. People were actually galvanizing behind, you know, this great couple that had been murdered, and let's turn things around. And that kind of screwed up the League of Shadows. It's like their whole plan. It's like, whoa, no, no, no. We had this whole plan going on. You guys are screwing it up. Oh, that just occurred to me too. The overall story consequence will be conceptualizing or developing a plan, which is exactly what the League of Shadows is all about. They're not about memories. They're about conceptualizing. That's what they want. So typical antagonists are actually for the consequence of a story. So that would be conceptualizing. It's perfect. All right. Even more so convinced of this story form. So once Bruce's parents were murdered and things started to change around, that's when there was an actual problem. So I wonder if it'd be interesting. I haven't seen it yet. I wonder if the first signpost will be progress. Although I feel like Rachel's whole thing... Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's right. Rachel's whole thing would be progress. Maybe future? Is it future progress in the beginning? I don't know. That'll be interesting to see if the first signpost... For those who don't know, in Dramatica, once you pick the dynamics of a story, it will actually tell you the act order of how the through line should progress in order to get that feeling you want. So Batman Begins as a triumphant ending, right? It ends in success and it's good, right? The main character's resolved and things are better. I think it's good. Almost positive. I know it's success bad in the second one. Almost positive it's success good. Yeah, because I think he puts his parents to rest. You know, I missed the last 20 minutes. So I got to check that out. But regardless, you know, whatever ending you have set up, it will actually tell you, okay, well, then this is the order of acts you need to go in to get that feeling. And it's really crazy how this actually works, how it actually feels right. When you switch the order, it messes things up. When you follow it, it feels just great. It'll be interesting to see how those signposts play out. So be on the lookout for those two articles this week. The analysis of Zootopia, which should be up fairly shortly. It's going to be a smaller one. And then the full-blown analysis of Batman Begins. And I might split it into two in order to talk about how it's not backstory, how it's an essential part of the actual story form, the actual story problem-solving process. And then also be on the lookout for Throughline Thursdays. Sign up for the newsletter. If you want a roadmap, get on the list. And also, you know, if you want to learn more about this, like you actually want to develop your story sense, you might want to check out our Dramatica Mentorship Program, where I actually walk you through the different areas of the table of story elements, and we work through story ideas and develop them and show how you can use Dramatica to actually create art. And actually use it to create great writing. I've seen it happen, trust me. So yeah, if you're interested in that, that would be narrativefirst.com/mentor. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.